Open the door to huge savings now at Menards. Enhance the appearance of your home with a new stylish garage door. Choose from our large in-stock selection of ideal garage doors or design your own using our free garage door designer in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on ideal garage doors. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello, everybody. Hi. And welcome to another minisode here on the Patreon. Or free 2 years later, whenever it comes out.
Yeah, I have to apologize today for people who are going to listen long in the future. Mine is very topical to about the next, how many days? The next 51 days. After that, I got nothing for you. I cannot
help.
Okay,
all right.
What?
Why don't we, what, Alex?
I just said, what?
What? Why don't you go ahead and take us away, Jesse? Why don't you date us immediately?
Okay, I can do that. So, we have on this show multiple times, both on this part of the show and the real show, talked about invisibility shields and how those would work. Well, gentlemen and folks at home, I'm going to send you a link. It is now not just something that exists theoretically or in the movies or in science labs. You can, in fact, purchase one for your very own use.
Fuck
at
off.
Home.
This is straight out of Mission Impossible.
On Kickstarter, they have Invisibility Shield 2.0, which is a lightweight, portable, next-level cloaking shield. 6 feet is what this shield is.
300 pounds.
You can move it with you wherever you go if you can carry that much weight.
No, that's how much it costs. 300 pounds for the full-size one.
That's not that expensive.
Oh, it is. It's expensive.
I mean, not that
two different takes on that.
You get a mini shield, like a little tiny mini one, for $68, $69. Yep. The early bird is $377, and the full size mega shield is about $414. And the early bird for the super duper ultra 72x48 shield is $880.
It's cool. I'm more worried about the type of person who's eager to buy one right now.
Well, if you're wondering what type of person, their pledge goal was $12,500. Their actual pledges are $117,000 right now.
If that's where we're at right now, imagine if UAPs are real and the kind of light bending technology they might be using.
This is 51 days to go. They're already at $117,000. And I assume most people are unaware this exists. I'm letting you know right now, this is going to lead shenanigans of the next level. If, unlike most things on Kickstarter, it actually becomes real.
The footage looks good. People already own the Gen 1 shields. It looks great. I don't know what the fuck, how it's possible, but it really is doing exactly what it seems to be doing.
Yeah, all the video footage, all the pictures, basically, they put the shield down. And some magic way you can see through it. It's light refraction. There's angles of the shield where you can see it's actually, instead of what you would imagine as a sheet, it's actually a curved shield. There are supports to the back of it, and it is refracting the light, and it makes it look like you can see through it. Now, here's the thing.
It does muddy the image through
it,
though. It's
just
very
like
clear
we
that
talked about
there.
Or we got great videos and feedback about when talking about this. If you look at it from different angles, it does become muddy. But if you look at it straight on, it's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
But also, it's not like the same technology that we're talking about. This is like just plastic that's like in a certain shape.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Yeah, but it's like built specifically. Yeah. But this tech has been around for years now, but not really like consumerable, like friendly yet. This is the first time I've seen prices where the, you know, it's actually affordable for people to buy.
Yeah. This is consumer based tech right now. This isn't like military grade. This is, you can, it's plastic. I mean, it's plastic. It's made in the UK. It's wild. This is a very interesting thing that exists that isn't, you know, something some dude posted on Reddit was like, look what I made. This is a sellable product that they are offering on Kickstarter.
Yep.
That's crazy.
It's where we are.
It's also funny in the FAQ, it says that if you, it like the shield works both ways. So if you're on the other side of the shield, you can't see through it either. It's kind of funny.
That makes it way less useful. There. You can't really. Well, no good, I mean, pranks.
If you're trying to hide something and like if you put something there and you walk away from a distance, it's going to be real hard for people to see.
Like, that's if true. I was if the you're city just there to Los hide Angeles, something, yeah.
If I was the city of Los Angeles, I would put these in front of those fucking like power things that are on the sidewalk instead of like trying to paint them to look like what's behind them. You know what I mean? Like,
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
I feel like this would be better for that. But
a little metal.
That, yeah, I don't know. It's very neat. But and for what it is, it's quite cheap. For the effect that it gives, it's quite cheap. But
it's cool.
I've
been sitting here trying to figure out what I would use it for. If I got one, what would I do with it?
I mean, right now, I feel like it falls into the novelty category of very, like, it's kind of, it would take, again, like you said, if you can't see through it, then what the hell is the point? But this is the start of a thing.
Yeah.
And if you want to get on the ground floor and mess around with it, I'm sure, look, as a creator, I can think of several uses for videos.
Oh, yeah. See, I should have went in that direction. I was just like at home real uses. I'm like, just what can
TikTok,
I do with it? Scare my
TikTok
cat?
Folks. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they'll go nuts with this right. shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's a distance if you stand far enough back that you can see the person. Like, I wonder if it's like
from a distance, it looks even better.
No, I mean, if I stayed close to the front of it, but I had the person behind it walk backwards,
yes.
I wonder if they'd eventually appear in the image.
Absolutely.
Like, I wonder if that, I don't know how it works. Like, I don't know.
It's definitely just bending the light around a shield, like around a bubble.
Which feels like it's super simple, and I'm surprised it's been took this long. I wonder what made it take so long to get to the point where we can make it.
No idea, but it's really neat. It's probably like some kind of weird manufacturing technique.
Yeah, is it a weird plastic or whatever they use?
Really cool though. Yeah. Strange. Heart.
Like maybe by the time it gets, out there and this goes free for everybody, everybody will have an InvisiShield for no real reason other than
you have to imagine if you could 3D print something. It's potential that you could 3D print something like this.
That's right. Yeah, I wonder.
I mean, I don't know how it's built. Like, it's probably like bent in there. Like whatever. Like the plastic itself is probably like curved or twisted in some way.
Yeah,
but I don't know. It looks like they are rolling it up and taking it with them, no problem, even though it's heavy. Or maybe it's not.
Maybe that's the key. Is it's the supports are the heaviest part, and the film is because the mini is literally what
it looks like an overhead projector thing. Like,
yeah, the mini is very small and does the exact same thing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I would get the mini just to like see what the fuck it is, right?
Yeah.
It's polycarbonate.
Oh, God, help us. All those dudes who make videos where it's like, I woke up in the future and there's no one in the city.
Oh,
you just
yeah.
hold that filter over your camera and suddenly the city's empty.
Yeah. Dude, that's probably what
it's made of polycarbonate, whatever the fuck that is. That's
yeah,
what
it's
I
like,
found out.
It's like very durable, you know, modern Crete.
Yeah, modern Crete. There you go.
Yeah.
That's
cool, though. That's cool. It's very interesting.
I saw it and was like, this is so topical to the show that we do.
Yeah. Alex, you take it.
Yeah. So this guy, Dr. Sebastian Voltmer, was filming the night sky. This is according to MSN.com. He said, while I was filming the moon, I suddenly saw a fast, bright something darting through the image. At first, people said, oh, it's a satellite. Oh, it's a space station, but it's pretty fast. Maybe it's a meteor. It doesn't have a tail. So again, moving too fast. No records of shooting stars at the time. According to the International Meteor Organization, he ruled out dust or bugs near the lens. He said it would have been more than 500 meters away based on the visual data, but according to BILD, which is like some kind of org, he says, quote, "I actually assumed that it was at an altitude of 100 to 200 kilometers, i.e. in the transition to the so-called low Earth orbit," according to the Daily Star. It's hard to make out the exact shape because it's fast and blurry. It could also be space junk or a military object. But he said that he was surprised for how it looks, that there weren't more reports of it. And here you go. Here's a TikTok.
Okay.
Give it a look.
Tej Tosh.
Let's see what the Tej Tosh says, according to Nuke's Top 5. Top 5 ghosts. So you can see it first on the little iPhone screen, and then he pans up.
I saw it dart by. Instantly, my mind was like, bug, but again, he's seeing it through his telescope.
It's pretty high res, like when you really get to see this footage.
Yeah. He keeps zooming in. It rips by at a very high speed.
And he says, not the ISS.
Yeah, it's interesting. This actually can go along with yours. It's not what I was going to bring today, but there was also a New York sighting last week. And I found this interesting.
Is this the cloud one?
No, but I've seen that one too.
There was one today that was like, looked like
that one. I just linked it to you in chat.
Some
this
movie.
Was New York. It was a string of lights kind of dimming in a row.
Oh,
could it have been a satellite? I'm trying to look at this damn thing.
Which one are you talking about?
The one.
Which
by the
one?
Moon?
The one that from the one that Alex showed.
The...
Got you. Yeah. This one zips by super quick.
Mm-hmm. This New York one, it's the one in Lowville, New York, L-O-W-ville, from March 7th. It looks like a fucking UFO sighting from like...
the Phoenix Lights, almost.
It also kind of like gives like Elon Musk vibes, I'm not sure, but like...
So, I mean, I know what Starlink launches look like, and that's usually not what it looks like.
Yeah, not exactly like that.
Yeah,
but what
was interesting, I think one of the reasons rather this was interesting to me is because remember that time I told you on the street where I saw that for the last second of that orange light almost like dim to darkness instead of like vanish? That it wasn't a string of lights like this, but the way they kind of vanish is exactly the same way I kind of saw it happen, where it was like a dimming effect as opposed to an instant off.
Hmm.
Not that people told me some really interesting things that it could be, but like,
yeah,
it's just interesting. But yours is like way more interesting because it's through a telescope that's focused on the moon, really high detail, and this thing is caught and it goes by. And it's even got Jesse trying to become a scientist right now.
They're both pretty damn good. Both of these UFO footages, I would say, are both like better than average.
Yeah.
The TikTok, by the way, is by @SebastianVoltmer. If you want to go look for it, Sebastian.
Discover anything, Jesse? Have you cracked the code?
No. I mean, I understand why they're considered mysterious. I'm trying to figure it out, but like, it's this falls into the category of it's so
something weird.
The one Mathis sent. I want to say that it's like flares, maybe. But the way that they go,
they kind of slither. Yeah, they kind of like...
Mm-hmm. It's weird.
They look like they're on a string to each other. Or on the lip of some kind of like, you know, mollusk-looking ridge.
yeah. It's very... Again, if you've ever seen the footage of Phoenix Lights, it does remind me of Phoenix Lights kind of stuff.
Yeah, I feel like it has to be man-made, but I just don't understand how. Like, I have no explanation of how it could be, but it doesn't seem...
Hence UAP.
Yeah, it doesn't seem extraterrestrial. It just seems like something I've never seen before.
Yeah, and the thing on Alex's is just fucking, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's just it's just a rare kind of sighting. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I'll bring us to the end here with a little bit of science, I suppose.
Love some
I shared
science.
This with you. I shared this with you earlier this week, boys, just personally. But another nuclear fission breakthrough has happened, this time out crazy. In South Korea. Scientists in South Korea have announced a new world record for the length of time they've sustained temperatures of 100 million degrees Celsius, 7 times hotter than the sun's core, during a nuclear fusion experiment. Sorry, not fission, fusion. In what they say is an important step toward the futuristic energy technology. Nuclear fusion seeks to replicate the reaction that makes the sun and other stars shine by fusing together two atoms to unleash huge amounts of energy. Often referred to as the holy grail of climate solutions, fusion has the potential to provide limitless energy, blah, 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 blah. So the most common way of them doing this is basically that donut-shaped reactor where they smash things together, essentially. Collider. Similar, yeah, like that. They're using the K-STAR Research Center at Korean Institute of Fusion Energy, KFE, which set the new record. Sustaining these high temperatures was not easy to demonstrate. I'm just trying to get to the point where they fucking tell you. Okay, yeah, so they sustained it for 48 seconds during the tests between December 23rd and February, December 2023 and February 2024, beating the previous record of 30 seconds that was set in 2021.
How can anything resist that heat? How do they contain that heat?
They just... scientists doing what scientists do. I imagine they built some sort of layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of like metal and cooling. And I don't know, dude.
How does it not just like destroy everything? How could it be that
their
hot?
Ultimate aim is to sustain plasma temperatures of 100 million degrees for 300 seconds by 2026, which is what they consider a critical point to be able to scale up fusion operations and like be able to actually make progress with it. So like,
that is so
we're
crazy.
Looking at like, I mean, nuclear fusion has always been like truly, like they said, the holy grail of it. This article is CNN, but there's a bunch of other articles out there on other websites about the same thing.
Dude, that is wild stuff.
It's crazy. Like it's always been like a dream, and yeah, it's under a minute that it sustained, but still it's not like it was a nanosecond. Like when we create those mini black holes where they only there for like under a second, but these are 48 seconds of sustained 100 million degrees Celsius temperatures hotter than the sun's core.
It's inconceivable. Yeah, I just don't understand how you contain it.
Yeah, it just feels like it would just burn everything. Like, right?
But eventually it would dissipate because it's focused, right? So I get like it's focused, and as it gets away from the focal point, it gets colder. But surely, yes, I'm saying, like, surely it would.
Wow, I don't have a clue. Maybe I just don't understand how there's like a lot of good temperature resistance on this Earth, but I don't think so.
I always thought like that if you were had any of that on Earth, like we would all just melt.
Well, you know, we were talking about a long time ago. I did the like one of those listicles that I did that's like about.
Here's the building of it, by the way, if you guys want to see the image of it.
Remember that?
How hot was it?
100 million degrees Celsius for 48 seconds. Seven times hotter than the core of our sun.
That's
a lot. I sent you a link in chat. That's actually a picture of it, of what they use. Like, that's what it looks like. Like, that looks like, I imagine all those pipes on the outside are like cooling pipes or something.
The
like even the
sun.
Door that like leads into it or whatever that is like scorched.
It looks like a sci-fi movie. Yeah,
it does. It really, really does. So
this is tripping me up because tantalum carbide, TAC, and hafnium carbide, HFC, are these refractory ceramics, and they are the most heat resistant things on the planet that we have created, and that's 4,000 degrees Celsius.
And we're talking about 100 million degrees Celsius.
100 million degrees Celsius, seven times hotter than the sun's core.
But is
I wonder
like,
if it's because
we're talking
size,
like microscopic?
Maybe it's like, do they say that in the article? Let's see. I imagine it has to be small. Like,
yeah,
that has
super
to be
small.
I don't
like
I
maybe
don't
at the focal point it's that temperature, but I can't imagine around it is this, because again, that sounds like that gets
hot, right?
Hot.
So
in
2020,
it has to be the same logic as like a mini black hole. Like, because if you figure if you create a black hole, it's going to suck up everything around it. Just as you create the sun, it's going to burn everything around it.
A black hole is a sun.
Well, that's, but I mean, you know, like the opposite end. Sure. Right. But like,
they say in February that other scientists in the city of Oxford in England were able to produce 69 megajoules of fusion energy for 5 seconds, roughly enough to power 12,000 homes for that amount of time. So,
but again, this is like microscopic.
If we're doing fusion stuff,
this is microscopic.
In the whole article doesn't mention the size or like or the scale, rather, I guess,
atoms is what we're talking about, right?
So like it has to be two atoms. So it had to have been. But the fact that again, it's the same thing with a nuclear bomb, though, right? We are literally splitting a singular atom and look what it does. So you smash together two atoms. I imagine it must be contained so tightly and so small. But still, whatever size it was still 100 million degrees Celsius for 48 seconds at that size, which is like, that's still a lot. Does it really matter? Like, at what point does the size of where that heat is coming from fucking matter.
Oh, what the hell? Tokamak. These things.
You can't. Those are the $20 tier can see, but the look of just bewilderment on Alex's face.
Okay, for clarity for everyone wondering, the first atom bombs, the first one used, was 2 trillion fission events.
Oof.
So, and that produced the explode. So it isn't just like one little atom collision is going to cause, you know,
well, that's calamity. Fission. This is fusion.
Sure. But this can be very, very small and leave no crazy, like exploding a city kind of effects.
You want to know the answer?
And it's still producing that amount of energy, which is why it's so important. Like,
sure. Oh yeah. Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
A tokamak is based. That's the thing. It's called a tokamak.
Yeah. The thing that they slam the atoms together.
Based around a donut shaped vacuum chamber called a torus, within which gaseous hydrogen fuel is subjected to extreme heat and pressure until it becomes plasma, an electrically charged hot gas. Plasma is also found in the core of stars and is the environment that allows light elements to fuse and release energy. The hot plasma is kept away from the walls of the torus by magnetic coils that line the vessel. One set of coils generate an intense toroidal field, while a central solenoid, a magnet carrying electric current, creates a poloidal field, confining the plasma particles. A third set of magnetic coils creates an outer poloidal field to shape and position the plasma within the torus. So it's like
magnets. Sounds like the way they would, and I know this sounds nuts and just don't, you know, but it reminds me of the way Lazar would describe the supposed engine of the UFO that he would work on, the magnet.
It makes me think of Magneto. And how Magneto, when he like contains something with his little magnet ball, you know what I'm saying?
The Lord of Magnetism, yeah. Bro. He's like so powerful.
The fusion process begins with the evacuation of air and any impurities from the vacuum chamber before the magnetic systems are charged up and the gaseous fuel is introduced. An electric current is passed through the vessel, breaking down and ionizing the gas so that the electrons are stripped away from the nuclei, forming a plasma. Okay, so under these conditions, the highly energized particles are able to overcome their natural electromagnetic repulsion as they collide, allowing them to fuse and releasing huge amounts of energy. And apparently, the fusion process is deemed inherently safe, and a range of additional safety measures are built into fusion power plant designs. Even a cataclysmic breach in a tokamak would only create very low levels of radioactivity outside of the plant enclosure. How about that?
I would like to understand what that meant, but
the
it's
chamber,
cool. Like
the
I,
chamber, wait, check this out. Can it explode? The chamber in a modern tokamak, such as the ITER tokamak, typically contains less than 0.1 gram of hydrogen fuel at any given moment. Should a disruption occur during a pulse, the reaction immediately cools down and ends, meaning that a nuclear explosion at the tokamak site like ITER is not possible.
I mean, like, think about that, man. Like, that's like a crazy step toward energy, you know, just that idea of just such a small reaction to produce more energy than is like put into making it happen.
It does kind of make the idea of, you know, when we think about societies that have harnessed the power of a sun and they build sort of a structure around the sun, like that really what we should be thinking of are the societies that don't even need the sun because they can make
our
micro sun.
Yep.
And everything has a little baby sun in it, and you can just power everything, like your phone, powered by the sun, but it's a literally, sun created by the phone. You know, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because it's literally just two atoms, and like it's such a little a need. And if we can figure out how to magnetize, contain, we'll get there eventually, whether we live to see that kind of stuff or not. Who knows? But
I have a feeling that is not on our
probably not. Unless the aliens come out and they're like, we've been using magnets, bro, and been like, whoa. I knew it, yeah. Magnets. Can you tell us how they work? That's it for us, everybody. Thank you so much for the support here at patreon.com/IlluminatiPod. We'll be back next week with some more in the part 2 of Zodiac for the main episode. Goodbye.
Bye.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another mini-sode. Yeah. Mini-sode 176. Seven. I'm not pretty sure.
I don't like this. I don't like it.
No.
At all.
That's what they pay for, dude. That's what they pay for every time.
If this is what they pay for,
yeah.
That's what I call Stockholmed. That's what I call Alex's big bucks. You know what I'm saying?
Alex's big bucks. All right.
Yeah.
That should be a new tier.
Alex's big bucks tier,
but it's like $5 million.
$5 million a month, and I groan forever.
You just groan for that one person.
There's a button you press, and when you press it, it connects to my phone, and I groan into my phone just for you. I'll groan right into my phone for you. Patreon.com/Chill90Pod.
You got to have operating hours, though. You got to be able to sleep at some point, you know?
I'm available only from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. PST.
Okay. Not too bad. It's pretty good number of hours there during the day. You can get a groan at any point.
That's a lot. It is a lot. That's more than a working day. Yeah.
Welcome to the Minnesota, everybody. What do you boys bring? You know what I have. If we just want to talk about that, we can. I don't know if we'll take the whole episode, though.
I have a funsy because it blew my mind, and I know we like to talk about this on here, and it was wild.
I'm already in. What do you got?
So you guys know friend of the pod, Amanda. We always send each other jokes and stuff on the phone, and she sent me this file the other day, and I thought it was fucking hilarious. So I'm going to just send you guys the file and you guys listen to it first, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. It's on Discord, Jesse. Green guy with his jumping pose. This is a chill song so far. The green guy. What? What is this song about?
So it's some type of yacht rock about a groovy green guy, and yeah. It feels like an inside joke I don't understand.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure it out.
Like, it's like, so yeah, my friend sent me this thing, and I just don't know what this is.
It's kind of weird, right?
It's just a song. I don't know what's weird about it.
You don't notice anything strange about it at all?
No, it's a groovy rock, I can't even say it, yacht rock song.
Yeah, okay, so
yeah, it's like some indie, weird, like...
Yeah, so this is Yacht Rock Froggy, and it's a song that was created by Amanda and a website called Udio.com that does AI music generation. So that song...
Okay.
So that with song... AI. So yeah, that song was made just off a prompt...
I'm not sure if that's more of an indictment of AI or yacht rock. I don't know which it is, because I noticed. I was like, it's a yacht rock song. Okay. Yeah.
So I checked this out, and it says Udio. It's Udio.com, and you can like sign up. It's in beta still. Builds AI tools to enable the next generation of music creators. We believe AI has the potential to expand musical horizons and enable anyone to create extraordinary music. Udio.com allows users to create music from simple text prompts by specifying topics, genres, and other descriptors, which are then transformed into professional quality tracks. So
how do you spell this?
Udio. Like Udio. Studio, but just Udio. I have.
Oh, okay.
So I started fucking around with this thing because you kind of sometimes have to wait because it's in beta. So it takes a long time to generate stuff sometimes. I've been working on the Zodiac. So I asked for like a Beatles-y song about the Zodiac killer, and I fed it to the AI, and this is what it gave me is a song called Zodiac.
I hate this.
This is where we are in technology.
I did not write this. I just suggested that a computer make this.
All right, I'm hitting play.
Here comes the man, the Zodiac.
All right, so it is a Beatles style song and music. But the voice is so stupid. It sucks, dude. I'm so glad it sucks.
The Yacht Rock one, was way more believable. The voice in this one's like, it's like, you can almost tell it's a couple
Zodiac
different.
Man. Yeah,
it's kind of like a weird like amalgamation of some voices.
Okay. So, yeah. So the Zodiac one.
This man smells like he smoked like three packs today alone.
Later on, there are some like background vocals that sound very Beatles.
It gets
for
wild,
sure,
yeah.
But like the main vocal sounds like William Shatner reading instead of singing.
Yeah, it's a weird like British like old man voice, and it's like kind of like beat poetry esque. Weird ass song, and I guess they can hear it right in the episode.
I'll pass it along to Dean, okay, yeah. And we'll get it in there.
Yeah, cool.
And then the that was another one that I just was like, write a song about the Zodiac Killer, right? Then I realized that you can actually write your own actual lyrics too. So I just, off the top of my head, because I wanted to be true to the process, I didn't want to like spend time thinking about it. I just tried to write like something funny that came to my mind as fast as possible. And what I wrote about was a pill that you take that unclogs your butt when you get clay, when you eat too much clay and get clay in your butt.
Okay.
I was sitting on the toilet when I wrote this.
Yeah. Well, I kind of want to ask what the inspiration was. And yet at the same time,
I asked it. I asked it for a 1960s AAA Broadway musical.
Okay. All right. Clay within. Okay.
That sucks.
Oh no.
I hate that I enjoy it. I hate that so much.
So besides the fact that you discovered this,
yeah.
And it's like interesting. Where are we going with this?
Oh, music is fucked. We're fucked. Everything's fucked.
No, yeah. I figured the whole point was Alex is like, oh no, we are absolutely fucked.
Nobody's gonna care about songs anymore. This is it. Nobody cares already. We were talking earlier today, I think in the episode or before the episode, we were talking about how nobody cares where stuff comes from already, right? People just like songs because that's how you get music, is in like 4 minute long snippets that somebody put out there for you to get. There's no context. You don't even know how it's made. You might not even understand about guitars and microphones. You might not even listen to guitars. You might listen to completely computer generated music, right? And then maybe if you can just generate 15 minutes of music that you like, maybe you'll just say, hey, instead, maybe I'll just start doing 15s. And if you can generate your own 15s, it doesn't matter if you know who the Beatles are, because you don't need to find bands that are good, because you can make music that's satisfactory to yourself.
I'm not saying you're wrong and that this is absolutely going to rock the industry even further, but also there's still like no replacement for live shows, right? Like even Hatsune Miku, which is probably the closest thing to like an AI. And I know it's a Vocaloid and there's people behind it, but it's not an AI, but like, you can't go to an AI concert and see live action the Beatles step out and sing about clay in your ass.
Mathis,
like, that's just not going to happen.
You can
definitely get digital music kind of thrown at you, but if you want to go like experience live music, people still have to be involved.
How many concerts a year, Mathis? How many do you go
Depends on the person.
How many do you go to?
I am in a unique case who did not listen to music growing up and didn't like music for the vast majority of my life.
You might be the perfect candidate for Udio.com if you just don't know any of
that. I don't think I am.
You want to learn about bands and their history rather than just getting straight to the music you want to hear right away? At the drop of a hat with the words you like?
No, because the thing is like, different. The song has to like resonate with me on a personal level.
What about you, Jesse? How many live concerts a year that you don't, that aren't like
Jesse's part right
of
now making his own musical right
like,
now?
That's part of something that you, that's that, you know, something that's not part of your job. Like, you know, genuine, like I paid to go see a band that I want to go see.
Like 2-3 times a year.
Right. Like,
yeah,
there's just, it's
the,
just
for, as an example, the next one I've already paid for, the one next one I'm going to is in August.
Yeah.
So like that gives you an example of where I'm at concert wise.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, sure. Maybe there's something nice about live music, right?
Sure.
But more and more, it starts to feel like, you know, we're going to be like the new Luddites, you know, eventually. If people who care about the Beach Boys or, you know, songwriting or beautiful language or things that we used to need that we don't really need anymore because we can just make stuff ourselves without effort, that's good enough. Right. Obviously,
Alex, what is this website again?
It's called
udio.com.
Obviously, nobody's going to write. No computer is going to write.
There's a song on the front page for me that says, "My man shit in his pants at work."
Yeah, that's the one that like got this famous. That's the first thing Amanda sent me that I heard. That was just, there's a whole album of things that he made that are all about this guy pooping his pants, and they're all, it's like fucking hilarious. Yeah,
it's wild. It's scary. AI. Like, think about when we started covering AI a year or two ago, and like how insanely fast it's blitzed to where it's at. It's it's scary. And when I still worry when Sora comes out, the video making one, like, that's also horrifying. Like, what's that going to do?
Yeah, I don't know. I still feel like we're a ways off from like getting soul in art from a computer. Like, it's still very obvious.
That requires, I genuinely think that would require what the scientific field calls general AI. AI with true sentience, true ability to reason, a self-awareness.
Like, yeah, like data, basically.
Literally, exactly, like data, but the first version, like a huge computer that's the size of a building version.
But that's of like, basically I data. Want and even, like, to paint, you know, like something yeah, that's like, yeah, I need yeah. to express myself.
That's, yeah. I think that's that's when we'll get there. And the question is, you know, a lot of the times I'm reading up on AI and it seems like we're still really far away from general AI. Even what Gemini is, Google's like more creative and whatnot, and how fascinating it works on a neural net, it's still not AI.
It just seems like general
AI. It's very good at pretending to be. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it is scary as hell. I hate that. The one thing that's still pretty maintained consistent, even though it's definitely gotten better, is AI art is always just like so, not always, but pretty obvious with like a lot of how it looks.
It's just not almost evocative. Like
too detailed cartoon cell shading almost.
Yeah. It's weird. it's all very mid.
Yeah.
It's all like it very pro. It's all very pro, but it's all very mid.
Yeah.
AI for me has been a great petty test of my friends' culturedness. With the willingness.
See, the problem is it'll always
hate it.
It'll always work on me because I'm just so uncultured into like I just I'm so insulated.
Well, it doesn't. But it's not working curious, on you, right? It's not convincing you.
No, I guess you're not. But I'm saying, I guess you would be able to fool me with it. Like the first song, I did not know until you told me what it was, that it was AI.
Yeah, same, big same. I was like, okay, what does this mean? I just really quickly want to jump in here with mine because it very much relates.
Okay.
In a way that I was not expecting, but I feel like we should talk about immediately.
It's about frogs.
Please.
In Japan, they ran a study about AI personalities evolving in game theory. And what they did, I'll just break it down for you.
You say a game theory? Like their own game theory?
In the idea of game theory.
Yeah, they put them in a game theory scenario.
I see.
And they're using Prisoner's Dilemma. I'll just break it down. So the research utilized the Prisoner's Dilemma game to evolve AI personalities, showing that AI can adopt cooperative and selfish behaviors. And then AI was given genes encoded with natural language descriptions of personality traits that give them more nuanced behavior. And then what they did was study what would happen, right? And trying to get it to mirror human social dynamics. Basically, this Japanese team using Prisoner's Dilemma wanted to see what would happen. And so they reported to scientific reports that essentially the AI systems were their objective was to try and obtain virtual currency, virtual gains, basically doing game theory. And the dilemma, if you know Prisoner's Dilemma, consists of choosing whether to cooperate or defect with your partner. And in this scenario, the AI, if they chose to cooperate, if both of them did, they both get $4. However, if one defected and one cooperated, the defector gets $5, the cooperator gets nothing, and if they both defect, they receive $1 each. The idea of Prisoner's Dilemma, for those who do not know, is imagine two rooms, and Mathis is in one room, and Alex is in another room, and I am interrogating them. If they both decide to be like, well, I wasn't there, I don't know what that is, right? Or they both can say, yeah, we did it. Or one can say it was all Mathis, or one can say it was all Alex, and the other one could. And those are the various outcomes. And, you know, it's one of those things where in this case, the result is instead of me saying, well, if you cooperate, boys, I'll only give you each 4 years in prison. But if both of them are like, it wasn't us, it wasn't any, maybe I could send you to prison for 1 year, but you both, if you both knew to do that, could get 1 year. But if Mathis is like, it was all Alex, then Mathis is off scot-free, and Alex goes to jail for, I don't know, the rest of his life, right?
Forever.
And so that's the prisoner's dilemma.
That's how it would go, too.
And so they made these AI do this. And what ended up happening is, because they instilled these sort of genes in them with diverse personality traits, they began to evolve over the course of this experiment so that they would sometimes be more selfish or sometimes be more cooperative. And in certain AI models, different personality traits took over. And so it's entirely fascinating to see how this works. And they're trying to observe,
became the way for everyone.
It became, I'm assuming, became their dominant way of acting.
Well, so there's different AI, different like AI, I don't know, I won't say people because that's not right, but imagine AI people, and they each have different personality traits they're funneling into them to see what will do what. And in the end, they come up with like basically that they're in order for AI to contribute positively to human society, they need to design guidelines for AI to mix in with the human population. And this is kind of like the, all right, we're learning what would work and what wouldn't, and where an AI might be a little more selfish than an AI who's willing to cooperate with human and like work with society. And I think it's super interesting. It's probably like a great way of making sure we don't get like, in order to save humanity, I must kill humanity. You know what I mean?
I thought you were going to say that the AI has assimilated the cops and took over the police station.
I mean, I feel like that's the fear, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
No, this was just a like a personality test thing. They run a bunch of simulations, and it's super interesting. The one thing they did say, they uncovered an instability inherent in AI societies, with excessively cooperative groups being replaced by more egocentric agents. And the funny thing about that is, even though they say AI societies, I feel like that's
society.
Human society in general.
Yeah.
Maybe there's math to society. Maybe all cultures are the same.
Maybe.
Wouldn't that be crazy?
I don't know.
Wouldn't that be crazy if dolphins like understood all our like societal structure? Wouldn't that be insane?
I mean, that'd be really wild.
Yeah. I mean, when you look
AI is scary, man.
Like, yeah, when you look at it from a cultural level, mimicking us is probably the worst thing we could get them to do.
Literally. Yeah, I've always thought, I'm like, you don't want them to be like humans, man.
We're the fucking worst. They should be, you know, we should base it off fucking Pikachu. That shit would be fucking, that shit would be excellent.
I mean, at its core, I think every human understands what society, civilization, humanity should be, right? We understand the concept of like our humanity.
Yeah.
But in reality, it is not at all the case. People are self-centered and fearful beings that will do whatever it takes to make it another day. That's like really what it is. And in AI, I would pick up on that shit instantly and be like, what are you doing, Alex? Like that. Like, no, thank you.
Maybe we should feed AI it Superman. Maybe we should feed it Spider-Man, Doctor Who, all the like super.
All we
good
need
guys.
To do is feed it Superman, and then it becomes an Elseworlds story where he goes evil.
No,
I mean, like if you said it's Superman, then the AI would be like, well, I have to protect you. You know, like it's always like a monkey paw genie situation where it's like, I want to be, you know, I want to live forever. And then you're just like an old husk, like, hey, kill me.
The Matrix is coming real, man. The Matrix is coming true.
Thank you.
Very Matrix slowly.
Is coming real.
Coming real is the wrong way to phrase that. But you know what I mean?
I do.
I'm scared for the day that we actually do generate sentient AI. And I'm genuinely curious if we'll even recognize it when we do.
We definitely will. It will be so fucking scary. It will be because
we won't see it publicly first. I imagine what would they, if like researchers would realize what they've done.
Imagine encountering it. Imagine talking to the computer and it actually does feel alive. Imagine feel
fake. I want to know what that's like, but then I want to put it away forever and never live in that world.
Yeah, it's
I don't know, it's scary.
It's extremely scary. So, you know.
Yeah. Oh, you want to end with something a little less scary?
Yes.
No, What is it? Is it the impending invasion of our Earth from invaders from another dimension?
Did you read the? I read the entire thing last night.
I did not have time to read the other thing because I was cracking out Zodiac. But yeah.
So here's what we got, Jesse, because you don't know, you have no idea what it is. So yesterday,
no idea.
A 56-page document was declassified by the U.S. About a secret, a potential secret project called Kona Blue. Now, before we get into what all this is, there are people that are saying this is a smoking gun. It's not. But it is important because it takes rumors that we have been hearing for years and actually gives us evidence that they were true. So the story goes, I heard this on a podcast years ago. And the story is like back in 08, 09, Senator Harry Reid and a few other people were trying to get what was AAWSAP at the time, Special Access Program classification. That way they could, from the people that were coming to them and, you know, whistleblowing behind closed doors, if they could get that classification, they could then reach out to private companies that supposedly have these things and start bringing things in. That was denied. And then they were told to repitch it as a separate program. So AAWSAP closed down. And then about a year later, Reid came forward and pitched something called Kona Blue, which was a potential secret access program project exclusively. And the entire 56-page document is the history of Kona Blue, it being pitched, letters back and forth, emails back and forth, talking about what the whole project's plan was, why they're doing it. And it basically confirms that everything that they were interviewing about back then, about this thing being pushed and trying to get it going in the back end without giving any details, was true. And you see, it takes place over the course of 2008 to 2012. Like, it takes forever for them to even hear back about their application, about things that they wanted to do with the program. And according to the same story from the interviews from these people on podcasts, they had one private company ready to work with them, and that was Lockheed. They were ready to divest some of their materials that they couldn't do anything with, and they were ready to give them over, and they just needed to wait for them to be approved as a special access program. They were preemptively approved and a few other things throughout, and then at the end, when it came time to give them the yes or no, they had been partially funded as well already. Lieutenant Lin, I think his name was in the papers, says, ask some questions, asks if the people that they're, the personnel that they're asking for is even enough for what they want. And when the interview was over, he immediately told his, whoever was working for him to terminate the SAP, that they were applying for. And that's what this whole 56-page thing is the declassification of those papers from 2008 to 2012. In the in-between, with a lot of redactions, of course, of them trying to get this program moved in. What they were basically trying to do was create a special access program and basically pull the materials from other places that they could and have it all in one place.
They've been talking about doing for 75 years.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly that. And they got pretty close and then shut down in with this here.
Make the best of a situation where they still had this funding to spend, right?
So that's where Bigelow got some of the 12 million that he got, because they asked for 22 and they gave him 12 million up front. They redact who it is, but they leave the acronym BAASS, which is Bigelow's Aerospace Aeronautics Study, whatever other is like in there. It's a huge document, and they also put it up in a PDF that can't be Word. You can't do like specific searches in it. It's like I forget what the name of the formatting of the document is. But there's interesting quotes that are within it. And one of them, one of the big parts of it, we're going to go over a small piece of it, is just like what the plan was, what they were trying to do with this office. And they break down like
buildings and
stuff
with
how many, some of the stuff. Yeah. Alex, so yeah, did you read any of it at all?
I read the quotes that you sent me, and then
I threw out there. Yeah.
And then I did and then I did a skim of it, and I was like, oh shit. But
it's crazy. I'm going to go over the plan with what they were trying to do, what they pitched. Basically on page 13, for 13 pages in, they talk about bringing in aeronautics, NASA, and a bunch of others to help with the research, including the consciousness centers, which I had to Google to see. I didn't know those existed, but they do, like study consciousness. And they say, quote, to conduct experiments to determine baseline parameters for physical transport across dimensional space-time barrier, as opposed to communication and data transfer only. The bottom of page 18. Yeah, under the justification of need for basically why this needs to be an SAP program, they say, quote, for recovered AAV technology, which is advanced aerial vehicle technology, exists and is accessible only within an SAP construct. Pages 21 to 22 say, quote, they look for records, reports, raw data, and threat analyses pertaining to, but not limited to, advanced aerospace vehicle tracking by any agency or armed services within the continental U.S., all data from low Earth orbit, lunar and Mars associated data, both historical and contemporary from NASA, and all data historical and contemporary pertaining to interaction sightings of advanced aerospace vehicles at missile sites, nuclear weapon storage facilities, and at Air Force bases in the continental U.S. They continue on the next pages, extend remote communication programs to communicate and retrieve data across dimensional space-time barrier, which is not something that's not new to the CIA. They've been studying remote viewing since like the 60s, I think is like the first ones that got declassified.
You know, the movie and further about down, it or whatever with George Clooney. And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. The men who talk to goats or whatever, speak yeah. with goats, stare at goats. And there's page 51, since the Advanced Aerospace Threat and Identification Program, that's ATIP, and study were first commissioned, much progress has been made with the identification of several highly sensitive, unconventional aerospace-related findings. Given the current rate of success, the continued study of these subjects will likely lead to technology advancements that in the immediate near term will require extraordinary protection. Ultimately, the results of ATIP will not only benefit the U.S. government, but I believe will directly benefit the DOD in ways not yet imagined. The technological insight and capability gained will provide the U.S. with a distinct advantage over any foreign threats and allow the U.S. to maintain its preeminence as a world leader. Which is, they really basically go into that, the pitch of Kona Blue, why it has to be SAP. Why, and they even say like they don't want to be have to publicly say what they're doing, like just lie about it. And they basically say like we need to keep this super compartmentalized so that other countries don't see what we see, which confirms what we already been talking about is one of the problems is that like if this is happening, it's so over compartmentalized amongst different branches. What's fascinating in those papers too is at the very beginning, they're pitching it to the DIA. Then they have to go pitch it to the DOD. Then they have to repitch it as a Kona Blue back to the DIA, but with the caveat that Congress would be the one that gave them oversight. So it's like a constant different governments can also different sections of governments can all give you classification as an SAP under their jurisdiction. But those SAP are not privy to the SAP of other government branches. So DIA SAP and DOD SAP don't talk together. And so they were like, we don't think you need to be here with the DIA. You should go to the DOD. The DOD is like, you need to repitch it.
Yeah.
It's literally just evidence that it's all compartmentalized. It's all just chaos. They don't know what the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. And they give money and then they're like, actually, we're going to say no, but you already have the 12 million. Give us 36 paper. They like, give us the data you have. They made 36 reports, handed them over, and then they were just like, they got debriefed. It says it in the report. All the people of the potential SAP program were debriefed, but no papers and no records were required. It specifically says that in the thing. So there's no papers or records of what those debriefs were. We don't know. And that's really what this is. It's just confirmation that these rumors and stories that we had heard years
weren't true.
They weren't bullshit. These were all actively happening on the inside of the government.
Regardless of what was literally going on in the program.
Right. It was all happening and it was taking place. It was taking literal years, like 5 or 6 years before they finally got the final no, after they got partially funded, partially approved and moved forward. It's very weird. It's very bizarre. Read the whole thing. I really highly suggest. I read all 56 pages, like top to bottom, read it. It's fascinating. There's some really interesting tidbits in there. They even show how like there's a little diagram that they show they would interact with the private companies, like company X would give it to this program. This program would give it to the DOD, which would then give it to this company to research. Like they have it all outlined in there and shit. It's just fascinating.
You know
it's
what
like,
I would be really interested to know about this is like how common this is compared to like how the rest of the government all works. Like, is this like fucking weird or is this like.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Open the door to huge savings now at Menards. Enhance the appearance of your home with a new stylish garage door. Choose from our large in-stock selection of ideal garage doors. Or design your own using our free garage door designer. In-store or on Menards.com. Save big on ideal garage doors. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
I just am like a baby who doesn't know anything about how stupid the
how
way
often the
American
project
government works.
Like, how often does a project ask for like $22 million and then get $12 million? Pushed along and then gets to the final bit where they have their final interview with their final presentation and then can it. And I don't know. I have no idea how that out, like how often that works, but also we may have nobody who can actually give that answer because they're special access programs. Like
exactly.
I can't imagine anybody in the public actually can give you an answer as to how often this happens as for SAPs.
Because there's not one single person who knows.
Yeah, but couldn't we look and see what other government organizations have had something similar where it's like
only if they've been declassified.
Yeah. I just would love to know.
Like this is declassified and this is from almost 10 years ago.
I just want to know somebody who knows how this is. I just want to know how weird this is. How wild this is. Because it sounds wild to me because there's words in there that are crazy and like the number of millions of dollars is a lot, right? Or at least
they confirm that report too, that the government, and they use it as a touchstone. The government has over 200,000 reports from their own personnel of UAP sightings and encounters that they use as a database. So we know that they have a database of over 200,000. Like that's
crazy.
That we got to pull, but we kind of already knew that, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Go ahead, Alex. I cut you off.
No, yeah. It just is interesting. And I want it to be a little bit more contextualized because it's exciting because it's a declassified UFO document. Kind of thing, and so it's exciting.
Kind of stuff still censored.
Yeah, but I just need it to be contextualized for me a little bit more, because like I should.
They talk
reading...
about advancing technology within gravitic quantum, like stuff that's not just, fantasy, like stuff that we're doing now.
Sure,
just like
I just want to know, like in terms of like how this was handled and stuff like that, like how the government is functioning here. If it really is something that's like super strange, because I know we have tons of. Totally legit SAPs that come and go like this all the time. So I'm just wondering if this is just a feature or if it's a bug. Like I want
to
know
how long does it usually take to declassify stuff? Because this is 12 years later.
I think it depends.
So
I just want
to
know how exciting this is actually. Other than the like,
it's not
words.
A smoking gun.
Exactly. The only
thing it's a smoking gun of is that okay, the government is very compartmentalized. Got it. Like it makes sense, and that confirms, and that these meetings. And funding did happen. We now have confirmation that Bigelow did get funded by the government to like do Skinwalker Ranch stuff, which is, you know, kind of what he's known for now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just a fucking fascinating paper. Again, I urge everybody who's interested, read the whole thing.
Kona
you can
Blue
find it online.
You can look up Kona Blue. Mm-hmm.
Kona Blue documents. They're 56 page PDF file up on the government's website. Go check it out.
It's very weird.
Yeah, please do. It's fucking weird. But yeah, it's all I got. It's just like another weird like UAP update. So. With that in mind, I'm sure it doesn't really change my opinion on anything. It doesn't really move anything like in terms of the needle, but
like
it does
usual,
confirm
though.
Like some things that people were like, well, it's only rumors. And you're like, you're right. It is only rumors. But now we have that. On that, we're out of here, guys. We got to bounce. We'll be back next week with another minisode for you all. We love you. Appreciate you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Jesse brought his laughter and the tales. Hey, Alex dropped the mysteries they unveil. Matha spins the history weaving scales. Hey, together they unravel spooky veils. Feel the rhythm of the stories they've been sharing. Podcast vibes with their voices they are blaring. Sitting with the shadows they converse. Hey. Each episode a blessing or a curse. Hey, Jesse, Alex, Mathis, take the hearse. Driving through the lore with no reverse. Chilluminati legends through the night they are declaring. With every tale the truth and myth are artfully comparing.
Open the door to huge savings now at Menards. Enhance the appearance of your home with a new stylish garage door. Choose from our large in-stock selection of ideal garage doors or design your own using our free garage door designer in-store or on Menards.com. Save big and ideal garage doors. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.